bought it so right. Are you feeling it? So loud, and it's so wide. Till we're both drunk, then it's so fast, then it's all over. Go home, go sleep, wake up, get sober. What a great night. And it's so loud, and it's so wide. Till we're both drunk, then it's so fast, then it's all over. Go home, go sleep, wake up.
The internet cracked. Like, they used to be really poor cousins to Mad Magazine. Like, you know, I used to sort of pity kids who bought Cracked because, you know, they had no idea.
Yeah, that's right. They didn't know who Alfred E. Newman was.
Oh, God. Well, no, you know what? If you had given them the fold-in thingy, they wouldn't have known what to do with that.
They would have just been turning it around.
They're like complete dorks.
Like a monkey with a new camera.
And they couldn't do a really, really cool play on words like Star Wars for Star Wars. It would never work that one out.
And yeah, they end up with something like Blah Wars.
Yeah, well, yeah, yeah.
They had no idea.
Do they even publish a paper magazine nowadays?
I don't think they do. No, I think it's more online.
Mad does.
No,
Mad does.
Cracked.
No, Cracked. Cracked. Because no. Cracked is just... I don't even know. If, I mean, I suppose Mad has a... mad.com website or something.
They do, and it's a bit shocking. It's a bit 1994, if I remember correctly.
Is it really?
Cracked.
I'm going to go there. Sorry about the clicking, Dan, but I'm actually going to go have a look at mad.com while we're having this completely unauthorized off-topic discussion.
Well, as long as you don't speak for 20 seconds about apologizing for the clicking, it should be fairly surreptitious.
I can totally do that while I'm clicking, so it covers the sound of the clicking. Here we go. Oh, yuck. Yeah, that's nasty, isn't it?
Somehow Cracked seems to have hit on this brilliant idea of just getting like a couple of really good writers, funny, topical writers, and just giving them free rein almost and just letting them produce a shit ton of content.
Yeah, they do. Well,
and a lot of it's fun. Like, a lot of it's at least grin-worthy for me.
Well, it's fun enough that I signed up to their weekly newsletter, which I never do.
Mm.
I just, you know what it's like. You have so much crap coming in through the email.
Yep.
And I said, oh, you know, crack, they're pretty good. And when you go to something like BuzzFeed and they've got that, hottest shit on the internet sort of thing over to the right, and there's always a cracked.com story there, and they're usually pretty good. So you're right, they've nailed it.
I get to be all hipster and mention that I was into Cracked before it was cool. I was actually reading David Wong's Pointless Waste of Time.
So you were into it when it was crap?
Yes. I was reading David Wong's Pointless Waste of Time website, and he was this was just a personal blog. And he had a meeting with the Cracked people, and they were sort of desperately hanging on for grim death. And they took him on as an editor, and then he stopped doing his Pointless Waste of Time website and went to Cracked, and that's when the site really started to take a hold.
Oh, okay.
And Dig.com fell in love with Cracked and just loved everything that they put out. And then what else is up there? Reddit.
Mm.
Now Reddit has a whole bunch of links to Cracked things.
Yeah, see, I'm on the... I found it now. I found madmagazine.com, which is a very different site from mad.com. And yet, in a strange way, more disturbing. And it makes me want to leave the site. Like, they've got a... Right down the bottom... You're right, it is. Like, it looks like something out of the internet circa 1995. And it's... down the bottom, it's got... a picky of Geraldo, that sort of American, you know, wank badger from Fox, he's taking a selfie in the shower.
Huh.
Like, instantly, I never want to come back to this site again, just haven't seen that.
What the?
And it's got Anthony Weiner is back in Sexta, season 2. It's got a lot of Alfred E. Neumann action.
It looks like someone making fun of Mad Magazine.
it actually does, doesn't it? It's like a piss taker, man. Anyway, like I don't even know how we got onto this. It's not what we're supposed to be talking about. But they got Don Martin cartoons. I remember them.
Oh, I remember finding my dad's collection of Mad magazines when I was about 7 years old. And, oh, I loved Spy vs. Spy. Could not grasp the film satires at all. Had no idea what they were going on about, but loved the doodles in the margins and Spy vs. Spy. Then I found his other magazines.
I got into it because I read a biography of... I think his name was either William Gaines or William Gates or something. No, Gates isn't right. It was William E. Gaines, who I think was the foundation editor of Mad magazine. You know, back in the 50s, it was an important, you know, sort of cultural touchstone. I think it got caught up in the obscenity trials of the 50s and 60s, and like it actually, you know, pushed a lot of First Amendment. You know, awesome, out to the edge of the envelope. And now, not so much.
Mm.
Like, the sort of the lead piece is who wants to see the Wolverine? And it's got, you know, the inevitable Newman or Neumann, whatever you call him, picture with Wolverine hair. And they got 2% of people who are intrigued by the idea of a movie based on a comic book. I'm not even going to go on.
Yeah. No, these are not just, breaking, yeah. splitting my sides with laughter.
No.
No. Well, in fact, no. And in fact, I can feel people unsubscribing to this podcast as I go through this list of who wants to see the Wolverine. Thank you, madmagazine.com.
Who are not our sponsors.
It's a bit sad, isn't it?
How far the mighty have fallen.
What were we going to talk about today?
Under the Dome.
Oh, Under the Dome. That's right. You boys actually got off your asses and saw the...
Actually, we got sat on my asses. Yeah, that's right.
Fair enough. No, good point. Very good point. So
I decided to take a break from my 8 hours of push-ups and other cardiovascular work and make the trek to the couch and sit down and watch a little bit of Stephen King.
Well, something based on Stephen King anyway.
Yeah, Stephen King inspired story, not just a picture of him. So, although that's what I hang up to inspire me while I'm doing my workouts.
Creepy Stephen King. He's a funny looking fella. Anyway.
I tell you what, no one's called this yet, but I'm calling it. And this is going on the internet, so, you know, we've got it here first. He will do a cameo in this series.
Hopefully. Do you think so? You think he'll... Like, is he...
He will totally cameo in this series. And it won't even be like a Hitchcock cameo, just some fat man walking around in the background vision. He'll do like some terrible Geordie Verrill style, like walk-on role with a ridiculous southern accent.
Didn't he play half a cow?
You know, my issue with that cow, and it's an issue I have every week, is that sure enough, it's beautiful when the dome comes down and cuts old Bessie in half. But I'm not buying the skull. It just looks like the same mincemeat up there.
There are no organs. There are absolutely no organs in that cow.
No, it's just like, it's just mincemeat. It's like, this is what... I'll tell you what it is. If you asked an American what's inside a cow, they would say it's like a loose meat sandwich, but it hasn't been cooked. Which, you know, loose meat, that's what they call mince.
When I saw it, I always thought to myself...
They made a cow made out of meatloaf and then cut that in half.
So they've kind of made a PG version of a cow being cut in half.
Yeah. Yeah, so uncooked meatloaf. That's what it is. It's an uncooked meatloaf.
And the special
cow.
Effect, the sound it made, not the shh noise when it got cut in half, but the cow itself somehow mooed after it was dead. And it mooed the demon noise from Doom. It actually goes, and it's a sound effect from the computer game Doom. I know it well. So this poor.
You are totally right. I hadn't thought of that. Like, I've watched more of this series than you have because I'm not addicted to it, but I am. committed to it, if you get the point. And you're right. I've watched that, like, opening scene with the half cow.
They are milking that half cow scene, let me tell you.
Oh. And,
well,
thank you.
And,
oh.
And you're right. Until you, it was funny. Like about half a second before you pointed out the sort of demonic post, yeah, like you know whatever it is, divider yep. moo. I just yeah, that, yeah. That
how,
moo.
How to do it? How to do it? How to bloody moo?
Because it doesn't even have lungs. All it's got is loose meat.
It's a deviled egg.
No, it certainly doesn't have any sort of throat with which to project the noise.
No, not a full throat or even half. Yeah, you're right. This show is ruined. Ruined, I tell you.
I keep thinking about that. I keep thinking about the logistics of... Because it's a massive, massive, completely invisible dome that just sort of crunches to Earth and yep. or just springs into being and just cuts everything in half that's in its way.
Yeah.
And locks everyone inside this town or inside the dome. So it splits
under
up couples and yeah. And so being a Stephen King novel, it's probably only days before everyone's turning on each other with pitchforks.
It was seconds. That's one thing I laughed the most. I've seen two or three episodes, not just the first one. And it's kind of like Springfield, you know, in Simpsons. When the lights go out in Springfield, people are smashing in windows and stealing televisions. Like the whole city loses its brain. It's the same.
That's
is it Charleston
right, yeah.
Mill? Charleston Mill? Charleston Mill? Whatever, something like whatever mill.
Chester's Mill. Chester's Mill.
Loses its, well, not everyone, but people like the boy, like the councilman's boy, decides to go absolutely bug-fuck psycho.
Yeah,
he just goes,
You are correct, and yet you are totally wrong as well. Like the councillors, this is where having read the book comes. It sort of helps because I've read the book and I think I know where I'm going, but I like these characters aren't new to me.
Oh, okay.
And that particular character.
Yeah, I haven't read the book. That none of these characters are new to me either. They're all of Stephen King's old characters. He's just trotted them out again.
But he's a screaming nutbag, and he was a screaming nutbag.
Kind of guessed
before
that.
The dome came down.
But in the TV show though, it starts with them having nice cute couple sex. So they open the scene with Nookie, and you they're a cute couple having sex, and you expect at least a half a second of post-coital calmness. But he's just off his friggin' tree the moment that dome comes down. He's like, no, I had sex, but damn it, I'm losing it. I'm just . He's a crazy.
Yeah, well, see, that's a funny thing. Like, I accepted that because, I've read the doorstop book, and he's cuckoo bananas most of the way through it. So when I saw him, this is the guy. He's cuckoo bananas. So I didn't have any trouble buying that. And you know, you're probably, well, between the two of you, you're possibly the only two people in the world who haven't read that book because it's Stephen King. Everyone. You got to read it. It's like the lore or something.
I don't know. I have to get with Dan on this, but I don't actually like Stephen King that much. I find him quite annoying as a writer. That's just me.
Why is that?
I haven't read him for a long time, but I always find it's like, you know, the car that goes crazy, or it's the thing that goes crazy, or it's, you know, the deep. And I always find it's the one thing, and it's not that scary. It's, how do I explain it? It's sort of like in Doctor Who. In Doctor Who, they try and write Doctor Who now. They go, okay, what happens if a Christmas tree was scary and tried to kill you? And in Doctor Who, that's fine because it's kind of like a kid's family science fiction show. But Stephen King, I find very similar. It's like, what happens if the car got uppity? What happens if there was a dome? And you're like, I don't care. Like, I just find it's, yeah, I just go, it's not believable to me. He just rubs me the wrong way. Don't know.
Yeah, I've got I'm a big fan of the King, and
fine.
But having said that, he's had like whole decades where he's just put shit out,
right?
And he's still put it out. Like he had a shocking problem with like drugs and alcohol and madness, and he just all the way through that he kept writing books, but they weren't very nice. Right. They were actually. Really sort of, this sounds strange to say of a guy who made his bucks out of writing horror, but, you know, they were very dark. There was no, you know, there wasn't a lot of redemption in his books at all. But then, you know, if you go back to, I'm not going to try to sell you on The King. If you're not If you're not a fan of the King, then, you know, fuck you. But
that's right. At least you know where we stand now. That's good.
So for this psycho from Under the Dome, he actually follows in some pretty big footsteps, because if I remember correctly, the psycho in some of other Stephen King's films were Cora Nemec, a.k.a. Parker Lewis Can't Lose in The Stand, and Balky from Perfect Strangers in The Langoliers.
Yeah, and he looks that right, though. Like, he looks like a little psycho. There's something about it. Yeah, he doesn't look well.
No, he is a little psycho, and this is... Having read the book, this is what I found fascinating, is because he's very similar in the book. Like, he does stuff differently in the TV show because, you know, the narrative is structured differently and they've got to get people coming back for the 52 minutes a week and pack a few commercials in. So some things are going to be different. What's interesting is that his old man, Big Jim Rennie, is a completely different character.
He's also a psycho.
Yeah, look, he is, and yet... you've seen a couple of episodes now. Like, Big Jim often manages to do the right thing
For the wrong reason.
TV show.
Yeah, he's...
Totally. He does the right thing for the wrong reasons.
If you bow down and worship Big Jim, he will see you right. The moment you question him, he'll stick a knife in you. Maybe not literally.
Yeah, true enough. And that is the Big Jim of the book. But the Big Jim of the TV series is not a completely... unreconstructed villain. Like, he in the book, the book's like a political allegory for partisanship in the US. Yeah. Like, the characters in the book are very much Democrats or Republicans or you know, befuddled independents. And none of that comes through in the TV show. I guess partly because they have to. The book probably sold, I don't know, 5, 10, 15 million copies. The TV show has to appeal to even more people than that. So as soon as you start creating characters with identifiable political beliefs in the TV show, whether or not you make them a hero or villain suddenly wins or more importantly, loses you potentially tens of millions of viewers. And so they leech that element out of the TV
they
show.
They didn't totally blandify it, though. It's not a word, but I just made it up, blandify. I quite like the fact the same-sex, multiracial couple, the two ladies with the daughter, and it wasn't kind of mentioned. Like, they were together, they were a couple, and then only one scene that I saw, it's like some that the old bigots sort of make, you know, we'll pray the gay out of you, and I went, oh, and they sort of, that was the only point I went, okay, it's a small town, they couldn't deal with this. But otherwise, they were just a couple who happened to be in town at the time. And I was quite impressed
with
that.
And can I say, Princess Daisy from the Super Mario films has not aged a day. Samantha Mathis looks as gorgeous as she did when she first appeared on the screen.
Is she the hipster dyke?
The psychiatrist.
She's not the black lady's partner?
Yeah, the hipster dyke.
Okay, cool.
She's the psychiatrist.
I've only seen the first episode.
Yeah, she's hot.
Oh, okay. Oh, there you go. I've given away her profession, Dad. I'm sorry.
it's not a spoiler.
Spoilers.
You're not missing anything. But you totally should have figured out she was a hipster dyke. Like,
I had
she's
no
gay.
Idea. I thought she... I'm
and
like,
she's,
is she
and she's got
the
those
daughter?
Those
Why
big
Why is she a white daughter
glasses?
To a black mother? The guy got very confused. I was very glad when they got back to the half cows. Hey, I can see why this appeals to you, John, because like two of your big tentpole novel or stories have involved giant invisible domes to some extent. And I couldn't help but be reminded of that scene out of the first Weapons of Choice book where the ships get cut in half by the big event horizon.
Did they moo? Did they moo? That's a very important question.
Hmm?
No, they sort of hissed and bubbled and sank.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
But a bit like the cow, I guess. Actually, when this book came out, I had a few people go, oh, you know, are you pissed off? No, I mean, you know, it's the idea of isolating a bunch of people to, you know, then sort of put them in under extreme duress and tell a story about them. That's a very old trope.
Yeah.
It's been done plenty of times. And I seem to recall actually reading the King first started doing, research and just plotting out for this story way, way back in the mid-1970s or something. So he had a run at it a couple of times, and he simply couldn't make it work. And maybe he was thinking of it as a political allegory or allegory or whatever back then, but things weren't that bad politically in the US.
I can see.
So he couldn't make it.
I can see why they've made this into a TV show now. It makes more sense now, because in the last couple of years, science fiction shows, and I'm doing it in bunny ears at the moment, science fiction shows are not about the science fiction. It's actually about the relationships. That's why they try not to even mention it's a science fiction show. They go, it's set in space. It's called Battlestar Galactica, but it's really about politics and genocide. It happens to be in space. And they do this and over again.
Yeah, but that's the... And look, this goes back to another, King obsession, which means it's my obsession as well, because he's a king. And this is that horror stories are not about the monsters that are in the stories. The monsters just stand in for, sort of much more free-floating anxiety. Mm-hmm. So you go back to the 1950s, for instance, and all the alien invasion stories, which were, huge back then, the UFO stories. They're not about UFOs. They're about, Sputnik.
Yeah.
The Soviets reaching the high frontier first. So
there's actually many good articles on the internet about why people have liked zombie stories so much. The fear of the masses and that sort of stuff.
Mm.
In that case, the first episode isn't hitting the mark very well, because I'm spending the entire episode thinking about the logistics of this invisible dome, like looking at the trees in the background that are along the edge going, shouldn't they be brushing up against it? And when he puts his bloody handprint on the dome and it stays there, I'm like, well, that's going to get dirty. That dome's going to need a washer, every couple of days. You're going to have to get someone out there with a squeegee.
That actually becomes, it's a little plot point later on, because some of the kids are, graffitiing on the dome.
Yep.
And stuff like that. But again, they've done it. And this is where I just find this interesting from a narrative point of view. They've changed aspects of the dome for the TV series. So in the book, communication with the outside world is much easier.
Oh, okay.
They are, in the TV series, they are cut the fuck off. There's very little they can do to talk to.
You can't hear through it. Outside. You can see through it. You can't get radio waves through it, really.
You can't get radios. You can't get TV. Yeah. You can't get cable. You can't get into it. They have created a world within a world, and they've... Mm. It's almost like multiverse theory. They have cut them off, The two universes are there, but they can't really communicate. Whereas in the book, communication is much easier. I think cell phones work, and physical connections that were severed have been severed. But I'm pretty sure, I'd have to go back and read it, but I'm pretty sure that radio and TV works. And Barbie, who is in some ways a more interesting and complex character in the TV show than he was in the book, he's in the TV show. He's a
he's like an enforcer.
He's an ex-soldier, and in the book, he's an ex-soldier as well. But his links to the military seem to be much stronger in the book, and he ends up becoming this quite important conduit for information from the people trapped inside to the power structure outside. For whatever reason, the producers have just gone we're cutting them off completely. Which I guess, I suppose narratively it means they then don't have to do, cutaways to the White House scene where they discuss, what they're going to do about this thing. It's, if they're completely cut off, then obviously you just maintain the focus on what's happening under the dome.
The problem I had there, John, I did have a problem with that bit. The army and everyone were doing the whole, going to the dome and looking around and but then ignoring people inside. It was almost as if they were quarantined, they had a disease or something. So it was don't look at them. Don't make eye contact. You think you'd be trying to placate the crazy, the people inside who were caught in the dome just by going, look, we're here with you. We're your friends. We're the army. We're your mates. We're here to help.
No. And in the book, that's what happens. But in the, in the TV series, the army cordon, which gets thrown around the dome, is very much... And they're portrayed as being under orders, not to engage with the people inside.
Oh, right.
Okay.
I haven't seen that bit.
Yeah. Mm. And you sort of, you get an inkling as to why they've been given those orders a little bit down the track. And I won't tell you because it's a pretty massive spoiler for about episode 5 or 6.
Right.
But there is a reason why they're not talking to anybody inside. But again, it's interesting. It's another real point of diversion between the book and the TV series. And in fact, another one, because you guys have seen, you know, in the opening episode, Barbie kills a dude.
Yep.
That is not the Barbie of the book. You know, absolutely no way would Barbie, as written in the book, have been involved in the stuff that TV Barbie is involved in.
What about Malibu Barbie?
Again,
what's Malibu Barbie's outlook on this one? I actually solved the communications problem all by my little self because I've just got a brand new stereo thing which connects to my TV with a fiber optic cable.
It's
got a little laser light that just does sends through the digital information. So if light information can get through, Bob's your uncle.
Yep. But they've got to have the information. They've got to be able to have that equipment on the inside of the dome. They can't get into them. So I thought of it myself, fiber optics, you could flash a laser, but if they don't have that in the town, they can't.
Yeah, but someone's got to have a fiber. Oh, when's it set?
Now, I think.
Yeah.
It's. I think I'm pretty sure Obama is the president. King.
Well, I've got a fiber optic cable and speaker in my house, and I don't even have a gold-plated hovercraft.
But how would you connect up to the dome, Dan? It's not just a matter of having him close.
Well, you just hook it up and leave it there and then leave the army there to fire lasers at it and figure out that bit. I've got the receiver bit.
I see. Yeah, okay, got it.
Speaking of tech under the dome, and I'm going to go there even though you guys haven't seen this, because it's not a spoiler, but it is a howler from the episode that was just on this week. Microsoft product placement.
Ooh.
They got a whole bunch of, you know, those guys under the dome, they are cut off. They don't have much going for them. But what they do have is an elegant sufficiency of Windows 8 mobile devices.
Is that who bought them all? That's when they cut off. Apple, Steve Jobs went, no!
That's right. it's an iDome. Yes. It's cutting them off so that they don't contaminate the rest of the market. There was a scene where in the most recent ep where people come to visit them, like, you know, relatives and so on. And one of the things they've realized is, maybe they can use, because they could use just pen and paper. But why would you do that if you had a Windows RT tablet and you could do big, you know, scrawly, like, finger on screen.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Or type.
So, and all of the kids. I mean, and you know what kids today are like. The kids are always up with the hot technologies. Mm, mm. So the kids of Chester's Mill are all absolutely rocking their Nokia Windows 8 phones.
I saw an episode, one of the episodes, where you go, hang on. On one hand, you've got all these parents, like, they're standing at the dome and they're yelling at the pastor and they're yelling at Big Jim and they're just going, oh, we're going to lose our shit and burn this place down. We're so scared. We're so frightened. But in the next scene, you've got every kid, like, from 10 to 18, all at this one kid's house. And you're like, do your parents not care where you are at any point? Like, it's Lord of the Flies in this house. It's like, hey, little man, if you don't let me power my phone and charge $5, I'm going to punch you in the face. Like, where are the adults? Just one adult, please, turn up and go, okay, this shit stops. Because I know the boys' parents are on the other side of the dome, but there must be some parents going, where are my kids? I'm terrified for my soul. You know, where are my children? But that's just me.
Yeah, I don't know. I had one of those parties as a 17-year-old that got out of hand, so I totally bought that.
So it's a bit of a big risk to watch a show like this, because generally they get axed after 9 episodes, don't they?
Yeah, and this is the thing. Like, they could wrap this up in one series.
Yeah.
Like, no trouble at all. Like, I think they've booked, very unusual for the US load, is a cable show, I guess. Is it a cable show? I suppose some nitpicking commenter will tell us otherwise. But they're booked for 12 eps, okay. I think, which makes me think they're cable, because that sounds like a cable
That's pretty
run.
Small. 22 normally, isn't it, for a series?
Yeah, on you know, FTA TV.
Right, okay.
Yeah, it is. Like 12 is like a British run.
Yeah, that's
or HBO.
But
Game of Thrones is only 12
episodes.
Well,
yeah, that's right. It's yeah. I wonder where, actually, I suppose, I mean, I could reach over to my computer and find out where it runs in the US.
Nah, just pull ideas out of your head. Just make shit up.
Yeah, just, you know,
we're not like a science podcast or something.
Should have done the research.
Should have done the research. It's how am I looking?
Gotta get a T-shirt with that.
It's Amblin Television, CBS Television Studios, DreamWorks Television. It's CBS. There you go.
It is CBS. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. It's only 12 eps on CBS. That's unusual. Mm. Well, the pressure is on to string the thing out so they can get, like, you know, multi seasons.
If it does well,
because I guess
yeah.
if you're looking at the sunk costs of a television show, they're fucking massive. Like, you know, you got all those bloody sets, you got the locations, you got to scout out, and once you've done that initial investment, then obviously if it pays off, if it gets the ratings, you want to come back to the well again and again and keep drinking. Yes.
Such and as so, Prison Break, which makes no sense that it went on, but it did. So
yeah, exactly. And this, again, if you've read the book, it would make no sense to drag this out for years, because there's a good, fuck, I don't know, there's like 6 or 7 months worth of story time under the dome in the book, but a lot happens in that 6 or 7 months, and you could conceivably string it out for definitely for 2 and maybe for 3 seasons. But you'd, but you know, by the end of 3 seasons, you'd be doing stuff like they were already doing here. Like, have you seen the episode where the illness breaks out?
Yes, they all get meningitis.
Yep. Yeah. Doesn't happen in the book.
Right, okay. Well, it did seem to be the easiestly cured meningitis in the world. Like, holy Christ, everyone's got meningitis. Quick, give everyone antibiotics. Yay, the meningitis is gone. You know, that was, there was no tension to that beyond who lives and who dies. That idea of...
Yeah, it was just, it was the TV equivalent of SPAC filler.
But what was even worse, it was kind of like, oh no, a very important major character has meningitis, and this lovely old woman we've never met has meningitis. Who's going to die? And you're like, I know which one survives. And you have that terrible, don't give it to the nice young lady. I've had a full life. Oh, just kill her. Just put a pillow on her face. I don't want 20 minutes of an old woman I've never met talking about her life, which doesn't exist. Like, it's, anyway.
Just slice her in half. And then find out what's inside.
And then you knew each other. I taught you in primary school when you were a naughty girl. Look at you now. You're the sheriff. Oh, well done. I was like, oh, die, die. Anyway, human emotions upset me.
Stupid feelings making me all confused.
I'm going to lash out like that kid. That's what I'm going to do. Oh,
now you understand.
If a dome comes down, that's it. I'm taking a stick to the whole universe.
Maybe season 2, the dome lifts and then a slightly larger dome comes down. Traps slightly more people.
That would be awesome. That would be brilliant, because then you'd have the army trapped inside the inside dome but not trapped in the dome. Oh.
I'm going to try and do my next comment without spoilers. Uh-oh. But something just happened in the episode that went to air, which I won't mention. It turned out not to be that important, but I'm not going to mention it anyway because, like, it's the sort of story engine for episode 4 or 5, whatever.
Did Samantha Mathis change jobs?
No.
No, okay, that's cool. As long as that's not ruined for me.
No. She's fine. She's still hot. She's still wearing the hot lesbian glasses. It's all good. But Barbie, bearded, strong guy, yep. Barbie, not Malibu Barbie, talks to like a soldier outside the dome, like writes a note. And he conveniently has a lip reading woman.
Ooh.
Who can read lips.
Oh, that's clever.
And so he's able to, he's able to sort of have this, reasonably stilted and yet quite, yeah, quite expositionary conversation with this dude on the other side of the dome. And the dude tells him that the Chinese have freaked the hell out.
Yeah.
Because they think the dome is some kind of super weapon that America was testing, and it sort of got out of hand because they were messing with powers beyond their control, right. et cetera, et cetera. And
praise
it came very
God.
Close to the Chinese losing their shit and starting a nuclear war. Uh-huh. And, like, all of a sudden, I think, oh, wow, like, you could actually do... Like, you could just completely run away from the way that the book turns out. And you could actually have the world outside the dome destroyed.
But then it's...
Which would be this fantastic inversion. Because then, rather than worrying about the dome never lifting, they would then worry about, oh, fuck, whatever lifts.
Stephen King has said, I read an interview, he's saying that it does go to different places. Like, he's not trying to keep it all... They're writing it different to Stephen King wrote his book. So he doesn't mind that. He's like, yep, I'm cool with them changing things. So I don't know if they'll go the whole Zed for Zachariah route of, you know, destroying the world and having one sexy valley left. But, yeah, it could be interesting. But then there's no hope, though. There's literally no hope.
Well, yeah, I don't know. It's like, there can be, as long as the dome is down. Because, you know, it's a hand-wavium dome. Mm. Like, it might be able to filter all of the nuclear toxins from the outside.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, there could be... They do actually say, you know, there's a slight sort of exchange.
It filters water. Like I've seen that. It filters, like, water from the outside slowly gets through. It's very, very slowly.
Yeah, yeah. And because it's like a hand-wavium dome, it could totally filter all the nasty stuff out of a nuclear wall.
Like, if you were inside the dome, could you hear the messages of sponsors...
It,
but Windows 8.
One of the things, like, and this is where I have an advantage over you boys who have not done your research and read the books,
right.
is that I can tell you in a later episode, we do find out that the dome is not entirely, like, perfect seal. Ooh. It does allow through Rainer's handmade sausages.
Excellent.
I'm glad about that because I was wondering where the food was going to come from in the end. I mean, they don't have a lot of fields.
Where they get their food is where I get my food from, and where you would get your food from if you had any sense.
Or if I lived under a dome,
which is Rainer's Meat Shop.
It's meat.
Rainer's Meat Shop with its very special handmade meat sausages. Down.
They're made of what?
New Farm.
Half a cow.
Actual meat. No, that's right. That's exactly right. That's the inside of that cow is not entirely dissimilar to the inside of a Rainer's meat sausages. It is all mooing goodness.
And they, I'm assuming that when they make their meat sausages, they use the same sort of level of cleanliness the dome would have when it cut that cow in half. Like that sort of subatomic level of just splitting molecules apart and just clean and precise and very edible.
I love a good sausage.
Yeah, it's like their smoked hams at Christmas are absolutely excellent. They do like hundreds of these things. And people line out up the street and the little cafe next door does a roaring trade for about 2 weeks or so because there's people just standing there for hours waiting to get in. To get a Rainer's Christmas smoked ham and a Rainer's meat sausage.
Oh, I've heard of this.
Can you get Christmas in July sausages?
I reckon you could. On those rare occasions, every couple of years when I do a cassoulet, which is this...
A sexy Spanish dance.
Not at all. I don't want to put you off. You could... you could do a sexy Spanish dance before you ate the cassoulet, but you couldn't do it afterwards because it's got like seven different types of meat in it, including some which are just pure skin and fat.
You'd get glaze all over the castanets.
It's awesome.
Mm.
Yeah, so you can go to Rainer's Meat Shop and say, I need the various components of this seven meat dish, and they will procure them for you.
That sounds brilliant. That's answered all the questions I had about feeding people under the dome. And what I'm really impressed is that they shop in Australia, because I'm assuming that's in Brisbane.
It is. It's over at New Farm. What's the big crossroads at New Farm? You've got the chicken shop on one corner, and the chemist. And the restaurant keeps changing. I think it's like a Thai.
Is it Sydney Street
at the moment?
No.
It's Brunswick Street and Merthyr Road.
It's got a Nando's chicken on one corner.
Yeah. You don't get one.
No. It tastes like shit.
Nando's tastes like shit.
I hate it. But this ham place.
I'll tell you what. If you want to experience the dome piercing awesomeness that is the Rainer's meat sausage, you don't even need to go to Rainer's to try it out. All you need to do is go to the Bowls Club at New Farm, and they have the meat sausage on with mashed potatoes, which, as I understand it, is a vegetarian-friendly dish.
I love the notion that the army standing outside the dome are just trying tastier and tastier foods to try to pierce that dome.
Well, they need to learn. We already know the answer. They need to get their meat sausage immediately.
Get some nice cheese. Cheddar, get the fuck out of here! All right, we've got about 5 minutes.
So when I get my meat sausages, else? You know how I do that?
Hey?
Yeah. I was going to segue. Oh,
okay.
I was standing on my two-wheeled Segway, ready to roll from the first topic to the second.
I just wanted to give you a time limit.
And you drew attention to the Segway.
Dan.
So let me just hum from one topic to the next, and we will just pretend that grotesque podcasting faux pas did not just take place. When I go to Rainer's meat shop to get my meat sausage, unless I'm, just skipping the meat shop altogether and going straight to the bowling club to have the sausage served up with the vegetarian mashed potatoes, I go by car.
Right. That's a bold choice, John. That's a very bold choice.
Well, it is. I could go by boat.
Shuk, yes, I suppose.
I could. Well, there's like a river that runs between me and there.
Car's not good on rivers.
I could catch the boat if I wanted to, but I choose to drive a car, which is a choice I made late in life. Well, actually, no, it was a choice which was imposed on me by Jane late in life, because she said, you've got to learn to drive. You're nearly 40.
So you couldn't actually drive before that at all? You didn't have the skill?
No, did not have a license, did not have a clue, mate. Could not drive until I was 40 years old.
That's rather odd. Famously, in How to Be a Man, you had to turn over an entire chapter of the book to someone else, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I had to give it to Dirk, yeah. I've never read that chapter because, at the time I didn't need to. Because I always lived close to where I was going.
It's just one of those skills. It's just one of those 21st century kind of skills that people have. It's interesting. So your dad, come on, John, it's time to become a man and, drive a car, that sort of stuff.
Nah, not really. I mean, Dad, I got vague sort of memories, deeply, like pushed down and repressed, to Dad trying to give me a driving lesson. I don't think it worked out. And then a couple of years later on, actually, I did pilot a car from...
Into a wall.
It was from somewhere up in the mountains, up on the ranges. Was it Toowoomba up there? Yeah, that's it. We were sort of out in that direction, and I was out there with a bunch of guys, and I don't know why, but I was sober.
What the heck? What's the point of not having a driver's license and being sober?
I know. I was sober, and they were very much not. Right. So I'll drive.
Before you go on, John, is there a statute of limitations on, pointing out that you...
This is ages ago. So
it may or may not have happened.
I did actually... The road was very straight, which was a big help. So I didn't have to do any of that confusing stuff with the wheel turning or any of that stuff.
That's, yeah.
What's the point? I just figured I'd done it. I didn't need to go back to that.
I've read quite a few of your books, and quite a few of your characters have driven vehicles, like trucks going down into South America and stuff like that. And at no point did I go, this guy does not know about driving. So you seem to, you write like you know how to drive. Like, you don't kind of, she twisted the wheel crazily in, 360.
Yeah, he hasn't done a backflip and then garrotted a man with a knife, perched between his ample bosoms either. But he seems to be able to write that.
That's true. Yeah, it's a good point. I stand corrected.
It's called fiction, Greg.
I have researchers for that.
A little man in the car. So, but in the 21st century, John, you don't have to drive 20th century cars anymore. But there are better cars out there now, or there are at least.
No, there are. And in fact, I mean, I don't have any great love of driving. In fact, the thing I find convenient about driving is not, it's not sort of, having that ability to sort of, climb into a box and then magically climb out at the other end and you're somewhere else that the kids have to be. I find that kind of a drag, actually. But the thing I do like is, it gives me a chance to listen to audiobooks.
Yes.
I've got through a lot of audiobooks behind the wheel of the car.
I think the only reason I've kept up with any kind of modern music is because I drive. Because I will turn on the radio station to something that is for the youth, and I will listen to youth music, at least be able to understand what the hell they're talking about.
See, I've given up on the radio in the car, mate.
I spend all my time driving listening to podcasts like Spartacast, downloadable from cheeseburgergothic.com, or Smart Enough No Better, smartenough.org.
We've never... There's actually a technical name for what you just did. Besides, having a bit of a wink. I think it's called... Is it back announcing? I think that's our first back announce.
Isn't back announcing when you come out of the song and you go, that was...
Oh, no, yeah, you are fucking... You are all over it. That's back announcing. Yeah, you're right. That's it. Is it station ID or something?
Yeah, that sounds like a station ID to me.
I'm just pimping the brand.
Oh, I like that too. Pimping the brand.
Yeah, I think I prefer that. When I did that little fill-in for Spencer at the ABC, they were constantly trying to get me to do that. I was constantly forgetting to. So it was like you just, for that 2 or 3 hours a day I was there, it was like you just plugged into the JB network. you weren't on the ABC at all.
You're on the JBC.
So what cars float your boat then? If you're not a car driver, why would you bring up cars?
Oh, well, partly because I got an email from the editor at Wheels magazine the other day. Said, do you want to write something? I got nothing.
You're like,
you got 600 words about which end's the front.
Don't laugh. I could probably do that. That's very much pushing the envelope of my automotive skill. I got a call from those guys because they're part of the... I think they're Bauer Media now, but in the olden days they used to be part of the Packer Empire. And I used to write for a couple of other Packer magazines. And so your name sort of goes into the, the Death Star's... Yeah. Mainframe, and it pops up occasionally. And I remember getting this phone call once, and it was the editor of Wheels. This is a good 7 or 8 years ago. This is probably a different editor now. And it's like, oh, JB, is that you? And I'm like, yeah, who's that? And I said, oh, yeah, yada yada. It's editor, Wheels magazine. Have you got a current passport?
Leave the country, JB.
Like, yeah,
leave immediately.
I did. I did have a current passport, and they said, oh, great. And then they just laid out this scheme. They wanted me to fly to L.A., pick up, it's like a Porsche or something, and drive it to Las Vegas. And they had like a 6-star hotel room already booked, waiting, good to go. And I had to write up the story of the road trip. you know, they pay, I don't know, $1, $2 a word, cover all the expenses. The hotel room was booked for like 5 days, but they needed the copy, the story, like immediately. You're gonna drive there, you're going to write this fucking story, you're going to send us the copy. But then, you know, you got 3 or 4 days in Vegas on our tick at this 6-star hotel. Go wild. Nice. At the time this phone call, yeah, nice. At the time this phone call came through, I had one kid hanging off one hand, screaming, and I'm waiting for the other kid to come out of, you know, the classroom. And I had to tell the editor of Wheels, nah, sorry, I can't do that. I'm on pickup at school this week.
You're a responsible father.
Anyway,
well, hopefully you took those kids to the Treasury Casino and tried to make the most of the hour.
You know the way that ladies remind the kiddies of how long they spent in labour? That's what I do with my kids, except it's not in labour. It's like I could have spent five days in Vegas in a 6-star hotel with all expenses paid. Except for you, I reckon that totally buries, like, you know, 40 hours in labour. How long is that? 40 hours. What's that? It's not even 2 days.
No, it's nothing. It's nothing at all.
All right, I'm out. I'm out of this conversation. I'm gone. I'm a dot. You guys have fun. I'm going to the pub.
Okay. I guess it's my round.
Yep, your round, baby. That'll pay for that one. Geese gets drunk enough to get over it.
To dull the pain when someone slaps you really hard.
It's your round. If you're hanging at the back of the bar, so just bounce. Like you're banging in the back of your car, we turn it out. Here we'll talk.
You have been listening to Spartacast, the prelude to John Birmingham's next Stalin's Hammer book. His current Stalin's Hammer book can be found at momentumbooks.com.au. Greg and Dan, the Cheech and Chong of less drug-induced pursuits like science, comedy and ignorance, can be heard at smartenough.org. This has been a Smart Enough Bunny production. Miley Cyrus speaking. Lyrics like trips in the arms of licking sperm with my miracle web. Cause what I'm hearing's all shared on the lyrical tip. Now I ain't feeling you, kid. We gave you something to do, but it wasn't a thing.